Welcome to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series.
Welcome back to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series. My name's Chris Smith, Shambles Guru on the interweb, and I'm here with Stephen Whitehead. Dr. Stephen Whitehead. He looks very solemn this morning, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just reflecting that I'm pretty, I'm not a proper doctor. A doctor as medical, because I could then solve your sore throat and cold.
You're not very well today, Chris. Yeah, you could also neuter our cats as well.
I can neuter your cats
anyway.
Just give me a knife.
Yeah, okay, right, thank you. I really wanted to tell a story about how I took our cat in England to be neutered by a local farmer, but it's such a horrific story.
Let's not lose the audience before we've got them.
Go on.
Anyway, you're not very well today, and it's nearly the end of the year, and I'm hoping that you're going to be up for it on the 31st of December.
Yeah, I have my sexy sore throat voice on today, especially.
Okay.
We thought it might help you listeners to we thought we might clarify something about the podcast. Is that the book is published on Amazon, of course, and you know that if you've been listening to our other podcasts, and it will soon be on in other places. We'll let you know as soon as that happens. But we're keeping with the podcast. As far as we know, the podcast is going to go on Well, I wanted to say until we run out of stuff to talk about, but knowing Stephen now, I don't think that's ever going to happen. Relationships are very complex and changing, and there are 7 billion of them in the world, so yes, we're going to be here for a long time. But we're going to keep them. It was a little bit of a debate about whether we should change the name of the podcast. If Ali's listening, she'll know what we're talking about. But we're not. We're going to keep it with the Relationship Manifesto. Aren't we, Stephen?
We are. We're going to stay with it. We've got a brand here, and we're operating a bit like Tesco and McDonald's, I think, from here on. We've got a brand, and we're not going to lose it. So we've got an audience for the brand. So the Relationship Manifesto, that title stays, and so does the theme, because even though we're going to go off on slight tangents, you know, I've been talking about Thailand, Taiwan, Tokyo this year, and you know, other changes that are happening around the world. Although we're going to go off on these particular tangents, we are going to stay always with the theme of relationships. So, you know, listeners out there, it's your relationships, your gender, your sex and sexuality experiences that we're looking to connect with and relate to in particular ways. And that's not going to change. So Chris rightly says, I've got plenty of energy to be talking about sex, sexuality, gender and relationships for time to come.
I'm hoping you'll slow down. Actually, you're not slowing down. If anything, you're speeding up. It's amazing. Now, this podcast is a good example because you contacted me after last week, and we talked about now what should we do next week.
Yeah.
And we and then you send me an email, and I love the title.
Mm.
I actually do love the title of the email. The title that you wanted for this podcast was "Does the Festive Season Damage Women?"
That's right.
Now, I find that very intriguing. So, of course, I just said, yes, of course. There's no argument here. So where did this title come from?
Well, this is something that it's been at the back of my mind for some time. I mean, years ago, I was doing research into men and masculinities and looking at what's called women's multiple roles. I'm going to talk briefly later about a book called The Time Bind and The Second Shift. Two books are both written by an American academic called Arlie Hochschild. So I'm going to talk about that, but the title is linked to what happens to the family and what happens to relationships at Christmas time. I'm not talking necessarily here about breakups, but about the intensification of labour, if you like, the work intensification, stress, time stresses, responsibilities, duties, all encapsulated in the feelings of we've got to make everybody happy. That's where this comes from. And I think women particularly are under more pressure in this regard than men. However, before I jump into all this, I want to say hello to Sinead O'Connor,
Oh, no, we've got the New Year's cards now.
Yeah, well,
you saved so much money on these new...
Sinead O'Connor doesn't know me unless she's been listening to the podcast or read my blog. She's a very famous Irish singer. And many of you will know that Sinead got married about 2 weeks ago for the fourth time. And then this week she split up. So the marriage lasted approximately 16 days. And it's Sinead's fourth marriage. And I know Sinead's got, you know, there's certain issues. Everybody's got issues. Sinead's no different from anybody else. So we've got a situation where one of the most famous singers in Ireland, Sinead O'Connor, has got married for the fourth time. His marriage has lasted 16 days. And she's not blaming husband. She's saying, look, it's, a lot of stuff is my issues, stuff I've not been able to deal with, and I don't want to burden my husband with all this, the problems that's going to come from the relationship if we stay with it, so it's best to cut now. And that's what she's done, very bravely, I think. I just want to say hello to Sinead. And I want to say, Sinead, I want you to contact us, okay? Because we'll send you a free copy of the Relationship Manifesto. You just let us know, give us your email address, and we'll get you a free copy, because you obviously need it. And I don't want you to feel guilty or sad about this relationship breakup. I think what you've done, albeit I don't know very much about it, it's only what you've said in the newspapers, but I think you've been very brave, very courageous, and you've probably made the right move. And don't please jump in quickly to your fifth marriage. I think, you know, fourth, give it a bit of time.
Stephen, some people would say she's not very brave. Some people would say she's very stupid get married in the first place.
Well,
right?
that's a question for everybody. You could say that about everybody who gets married, that everybody's very stupid. We've got...
No. I wouldn't say, very stupid get married. I say very stupid to get married and then break up 16 days later, because the reason... Why would you get married? Surely she knew why she would break up.
I don't know the circumstances, but it's unusual. And it's unusual, but it's not a case that's never happened before in the past. I mean, I think there's many couples go into relationships, get married out of some sense of obligation or duty or just hope, and then very quickly realise, and I mean very quickly, maybe weeks or 2 weeks into the situation, this is going to be hard work. This is not going to be the lovely rose-covered, sweet-smelling, scented, happy ever after place that I hope for. So then you've got a choice. You stick with it and see where it goes. And many couples do that out of financial requirement, financial necessity, family obligations, all the rest of it. Or you cut. And Sinead's, we all know, I mean, anybody who's followed Sinead O'Connor's character, she's a very strong-minded woman. She'll do what she wants, and she's had the strength of character to cut now. Should she have got married in the first place? Clearly not, but I mean, she did.
16 days.
I know.
It sounds like they weren't in Las Vegas at the time, were they?
I suspect
there's a lot of 16-day marriages in Las Vegas.
I'm sure. I think it was a drive-in marriage somewhere in America. One of these, you drive in and that's it. But anyway, I can't say any more about Sinead O'Connor. I say, Sinead, you have our thoughts are with you. A free copy of the Relationship Manifesto on its way to you if you contact us.
I'll have a Big Mac, a Coke, and can we get married at the same time?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's that world we're into where marriage becomes something you just pick off the shelf and you're in and out of it. You're in it and out of it just as quickly. A situation whereby, you know, modern relationships today, they're not lasting that long. A single relationship, never mind marriage, you know, it's most relationships don't get beyond the first 12 months. 5 years for a relationship is quite a long time. Marriages, where there's that element of longer commitment, in the UK are lasting 11.4 years now on average. The new generation of marriages, I mean by that, the marriages that have occurred in the last 15 to 20 years in the UK, a third of them are already finished.
Yes.
And of the remaining two-thirds, at least half of those will disappear over the next two decades. So it's a big risk, but should we do it? Okay, I mean, there's the experience, but again, one of the key themes of the Relationship Manifesto is is have these experiences, and but you know, don't feel guilty every time it doesn't work out. You know, use it as a stepping stone for new experiences, new development, and your own personal maturity.
Before we come back to does the festive season damage women?
Yeah,
I wonder what the greatest number of marriages with one person is. Your greatest number of wives or husbands.
See. Yeah.
Have you any idea?
I have no idea. It would be interesting to check that out.
We should Google it one day.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It would. Yeah. It would be. It'd be quite a few, I would think. I'm on four. Though one relationship, I wasn't married, but it was common law relationship, common law wife. I think if you're up to six or seven, that's going some. But it's expensive and it's emotionally hard work. You know, you don't want to put yourself through it all the time. And every marriage ends as usually a divorce down the line. The only people who really benefit from that are the divorce lawyers.
Yeah, I know. It's just a continual love relationship you have with lawyers, isn't it? I'm going to Google that, and hopefully we'll come back to it next week because I'm sure it's in the Guinness Book of Records for the greatest number of sequential wives rather than at the same time. But does the festive season damage women?
You know, this is something I think we can too easily forget that. The festive season, at the moment, let's stay with Christmas, but we could also include Thanksgiving, we could include anniversaries, we could include holidays, we include birthdays, whether it's adult birthdays or children's birthdays or whatever, Easter time. All these moments when families supposedly come together. And now they come together not for conflict, but for harmony. Families don't come together to fight. Though often that can be one of the aspects of it. But they come together for communal association, a reinforcement of identity, a reinforcement of the family identity, a reinforcement of culture, of traditions, of values, statements of love and affection, statements of intimacy. All this is meant to be harmonious. It's meant to be comforting, connecting, about consideration and caring for each other. Of every age, from the young to the very old. And my point is this, that the gender that's charged or tasked by society, east and west, north and south, for ensuring that harmony, are women. Females are the ones who are charged, adult females are the ones who are charged by society for building in the labour, the emotional work to make those harmonious moments, the festive season, make it work. Now, I don't think this is particularly new. We could speculate this has been the situation for millennia, but there is something different now happening around the world, and I'll come back to that in a moment. But I was partly inspired to talk about this from a writing which I got from friend Catherine Chen. Hi, Catherine. Catherine's a PhD student in Taipei, Taiwan. And Catherine sent me a writing here, which I just want to quote from this because I think what Catherine's talking about, she's picking up on this very issue of women having to maintain the harmony. But she's talking about it in terms of Chinese culture. Though I would, you know, as I said, I think this is very applicable also to what's happening in the West. What she said, I'm quoting, not verbatim, but I'm picking out the main points. It's a time for the family to get together, everybody to put on a happy face, and the elders and young ones, they come together and they share. You simply cannot fight or even argue. If you break something, this is in Chinese culture, there is a special way of appeasing the gods about that moment of breakage. So the whole thing, the whole point of it all is keep the harmony, which is stressed over and over again in Chinese culture. But it's the women who mainly do the domestic chores in everyday lives. And they may be, in the festive season, may have to prepare 10 or 20 family feast dinner. Depends on how big the family is. And it's always the husband's family are the ones that primarily to be taken care of. So the mother, the wife, is the one who has this responsibility. So wives would have to prepare at least 10 or 15 big traditional dishes, clean the house inside out. It's another Chinese New Year tradition. Make sure the parents-in-laws are happy, the brother and sister-in-laws are happy with the cooking, the cleaning of the house, and the whole attitude over the holiday gets tasked on the women. That's even, and Chinese New Year is even a bigger thing in China than it is Christmas is in the West. So all these traditions require women to be the harmonious gender, because only when harmony exists can we have one happy family, happy lives. So we've got unity, harmony, reticence, all Asian-specific Chinese cultural heritage. All these societies stress this kind of rhetoric, and it's done to women from the moment they're born, really. Will Asian women, Asian women automatically know more about harmony than men? It's supposed to be inborn. All this idea that women, born female, automatically, by virtue of their DNA or genetic coding, somehow understand how to be harmonious, how to create harmony, comfort, caring. It's not, of course. It's learnt behaviour, and that's it, by being learnt, we recognise that it's cultural. Now, I think that this is changing in the West. I think that women are resisting it, but I think there's the idea that this notion of females creating harmony within families and within communities and de facto within societies is deeply embedded in culture, and it's an onerous responsibility to impose on women. That's why Christmas is damaging for women.
Mm.
Because they're the ones who are meant to make it work. They do the planning, the preparation. They do the work on the day. They're the ones who invariably do the cooking. Many, many times when I was working at Keele University, my students, under pressure doing degrees, postgraduate degrees, coming up to Christmas, and I'd say to them, well, at least you've got a Christmas holiday. And the older women would say, oh, hang on, what holiday? I want to do my studying. I want to do my reading, but I've got, Christmas, I'm going to have to be doing the dinner. I've got in-laws coming. And the women, we're talking women in the 30s, 40s particularly, got children, got in-laws, got husbands, partners. And the women feel responsible to make sure it all happens. It all works. It all goes off smoothly. So the two worst days of the year, Christmas Day and Boxing Day, these horrific days that we pretend are somehow wonderful, they are so laden with massive expectation, not imposed on the men, but imposed on the women in the family, the adult women, meant to make it all work. Everybody's happy. Parents are happy. In-laws are happy. Kids are happy. Husband, partner's happy. Now, why? Mm. Why do women have to do that? Because the thing is this, if you go back to, your family's time, go back a couple of generations, maybe there was a certain balance in it. If the husband was
working down the coal mine.
Down the coal mine, in the steel works, at the shipbuilding yard, down in the factory. Okay. He's working, his wife's at home, she's raising the children, she's got this domestic sphere to be responsible for, look after. One can understand.
Yeah, isn't it just a partnership role with each of the people in the partnership having different roles,
absolutely,
supportive roles?
Absolutely, but that was a traditional gender role play. Men went out to work and women stayed at home, looked after the private sphere. And in terms of power dynamics, men were exercising power at work in the public domain. You have a look at a picture of a boardroom meeting in the 1950s. The only woman is the one serving the coffee.
Yes.
You have a look at the picture of happy families in the 1950s and 1960s, and it's the women who were stood there behind the man with the apron serving the dinner while the man sits down with the 2.3 children having eating it. Okay, but the woman didn't go out of work. The man had a full-time job. He was a male breadwinner. He brought home the bacon, so to speak. The woman looked after the children, make sure they're okay, did all the domestic labour and the emotional labour at work. But that's no longer the case. And it's no longer the case in the West, and it's no longer the case in the East. You've now got women working full-time. They've got careers. Increasingly, we're going to see over the next 2 or 3 years in the West, and we're starting to see it here in Asia, women earning more than men. Mm-hmm. Certainly women with degrees and postgraduate qualifications going into professions, they're going to be earning the same, if not more, than men. So the idea that women are the sole rulers and with sole responsibility for the private sphere, the home, doesn't hold sway if they're now following full-time careers in the public sphere as well. This is what Arlie Hochschild, the American academic, over 15 years ago described as the second shift. And what Hochschild's research did signaled the beginning of a real tension, a crisis in families. And I don't think it's when you could, and Hochschild talks about it as a crisis. And I think it is a crisis now, and it's a crisis that's got worse. And it's why we're seeing more divorces. And I'll come back to this in a minute. The crisis is that women are being asked to do too many things. They're being asked to provide all the harmony, the comfort, the consideration, the care, the emotional support for the family to ensure the family holds together. And they're also being asked to go out and earn the money to make sure the family's got the economic basis to do all that. Where's the men in it? The men aren't playing on, most men, though there's an increasing number of house husbands in the West, I know, but most men do not take on their share of the housework. They're not the ones doing the ironing, the washing up, the cleaning, the childcare. Now, there are a number of men doing that. I'm well aware of that. Great. But there's still a lot of men who don't do that. And I think that that's the reason why Christmas is a damaging time for women. And it's underpinned. The problem that's imposed upon women is not just the expectation that because you're a woman, you'll be a natural caring individual. It's the guilt that women can feel if it's not perfect. Yeah, women can feel a lot of guilt about not being the perfect wife, not being the perfect mother, not being the perfect partner. Now they've got to try and be the perfect professional.
Why don't they just turn around to the husband and say, I've had a number of emails from friends over this particular Christmas that's just gone, and who are saying, you know, yeah, my wife, girlfriend is doing the Christmas lunch, and I'm helping.
I
found that encouraging. Oh, yes, that was a cynical laugh. I find that encouraging. I thought, you know, you think it's the burden is still on the female's shoulders.
I think there's two things here. I think men have got to be more proactive and say, well, I'm going to take on this, and particularly in the West, where you've got, I'm talking now about not those families that got the old traditional gender role play, where the woman's at home all day and the man's out at work. I'm talking about those families where you've got double income, two partners both working full time. Mm. In that situation, both partners have got to equally share the domestic work, the domestic labour, the kids and all the rest of it. It's not about helping, it's about complete equality. And I think that comes on to one of the things that we're noticing in what divorce lawyers in the West are now saying is happening, why couples are splitting up in the West. And it's not about infidelity. Infidelity is still a big one, but it's not as big an issue as it used to be. Fewer marriages now are splitting up because one or both partners have been unfaithful. Increasingly, younger couples, younger generation of couples are not seeing that as the killer point. They can get over it. Some can't, I know. But it's not necessarily the big one as it was. Money's the other big issue. Financial pressures. And we're seeing an increase in divorces now since 2008. The financial crisis around the world, that's kicking into families. But it's this growing apart. What many couples now say, what many women say, why they want a divorce, is not because of sex issues, not necessarily because of money, but simply because they grow apart. And they're growing apart because there's not, in my opinion, you've got to look at at each individual situation, I know, but I think that growing apart's happening because the project of the relationship, of the marriage, is gone. You've got to work at it, and it means the physical effort that goes into it. So if the guy's off at work all day and considers his career more important than his wife's, comes back, not playing an equal role in the relationship, particularly at high pressure times like Christmas, that's when the growing apart occurs. The wife will think, well, why am I doing this? Why have I got this extra burden? Why have I got this?
They don't pick
shift?
Up this before the marriage, then, you don't think?
I think many couples don't.
Yeah.
I think many women, and I'm sorry, women, I've spoken to many young women, they're naive about what's going to happen come marriage. If you want to test a marriage, I mean, you can get into a relationship and it can be. Let me give you an example of two couples. You've got one couple, both well-educated, both professionals, both earning good money, no children, can spend time with the career, can take the best holidays in the world, can have a great car each, can pay for a big mortgage, fine. They can work 6 days a week, if they want, and have one day together, and the marriage can survive. Money's not an issue. Neither of them play away. Okay, sex continues. They've got to watch for that one, but there's no additional burden on them. There's no children. You see, there's no financial pressures. We're talking highly paid professionals. I know many couples like this around the West. Those couples are somewhat safeguarded. They can continue. As long as one or the other doesn't fall in love with someone else, they can continue for a long time. But I take another couple whereby they're both well-educated, they've both got potential to earn money, but children come along. Not one, but two. Then you've got pressure. Maybe one of the children has a health issue. Maybe the wife has a health issue, having had children. Maybe the stress that comes from that, the time factor, how you look after the children, who looks after the children. If there aren't grandparents readily available to lend support, who's going to do it? Suddenly money becomes critical, because you now, if one or both of those partners are going to continue working, you've got to pay for that childcare. And that childcare can quickly, having two children, young children, quickly take away all your income from one partner's income. One partner, previously earning good money, now finds that money going to pay for the childcare. So that partner can carry on with a career, not take 7 or 8 years out. No, children are children coming into a relationship will test it.
That's interesting, because from what you've just said, am I right to think that you're saying that relationships without children are more likely to succeed than relationships with children? But let me add one other thing to that. Sometimes people say, well, the reason they're staying together is because of the children.
Well, I don't think people do that so much now. I think that's people used to do, maybe.
Yes.
Because of the social sanction on couples who did split. I think in the 50s and 60s, maybe through the 70s.
But that stigma is no longer there.
That stigma's not there anymore. People are divorcing all the time. And you know, there's in the UK, it's about 60% of children now born out of wedlock. In
60%?
60%, yeah. It's more than
single parent.
They're born to single. They're born to unmarried couples or single parents. The same in the US. So it's probably not quite that high, but it's certainly about 40-45%. That's the trend. So children, increasingly, are not even born into marriage situation, and they're often born to single parents who aren't in committed, steady relationships. Increased number of divorces, children, being shared between parents over Christmas. You know, you're going to be with mum and dad. You're going to be with mum on Christmas Day. You're going to be with dad on Boxing Day. This sort of thing. No, it's very common now.
Yes.
Children will test it. Children always did test relationships, but in the past, or they always did test marriages. But in the past, when the gender roles were fairly fixed, the woman's almost saw her role, her duty was to get married, provide for the family, be a good mother, be a good wife, not go out and earn money, but to hold the family together in terms of harmony, caring, consideration, generating the intimacy and the love and the protection of that family. Looking after everybody, making sure everything worked while the man went off and did whatever he did in order to make money to put food on the table. So those that role's changed, and it's not just changed in the West. We're seeing the same changes now in the East. And that's where the test is coming on relationships.
In the East, I think a good example is, and you mentioned it earlier on, was Chinese New Year.
Yeah.
Chinese New Year is very much a face situation.
Oh, yeah.
It's face. Absolutely. It's, you know, you have a public perception, you know, you have a public role to fill almost. Yeah. You know, it's face to be the good mother or the good father. It's very much a male chauvinist society, though. Still,
I think I think it is here, and it's, even though we're seeing the emerging generation of young, powerful, well-educated women into business, into politics in Asia, there's still this undercurrent of women being seen as very feminine. They can be powerful, but they're still got to be women in the sense of being caring, being passive, being dutiful, being respectful, and being respectful to elders and being respectful to each other and to men. And I think men are given a lot more play, a lot more freedom to play in different ways out here in Asia, where women have got to be careful about the gaze, the social gaze on them. It can be very harsh, very strict. They've got to be respectable. They've got to conduct themselves in a certain way which is respectable. And we see that here in Thailand, and you certainly see it in China. The change, of course, is that women now have the educated generation of women coming through the universities and now into employment. Women in the 30s, certainly, and 20s, yes, they have more choice. They're not looking for the old style type of relationship where they stayed at home and looked after a husband who then went out and earned the money. They're looking for a balanced relationship built around love and equality. Mm. And that's the test. You can have love and equality. As I said earlier, if there's a professional couple, both working, both got similar jobs, they can live a very good life. You know, two incomes, one house, all the financial material trappings that can go with that lifestyle can be very good, very nice. Children come along, that's the test. Who does what? And who does what in the home in terms of childcare? And I've had this discussion with students in the past, and many students fail to see, not unsurprisingly, 2021, they fail to see this scenario unfolding for them in the future. But invariably it does. And this is one of the reasons, I say earlier, it's one of the reasons why there's this increase in number of divorces, along with infidelity, obviously, money pressures, but also this increase in demand on women to perform the second shift. And women think, well, why should I? I can live better on my own. I can live more comfortably on my own. I don't need to look after a husband and children. And often they just cut. And they grow, as I say, grow apart. The love falters.
Mm. The theme, the question, which is the theme of this conversation, does the festive season damage women? From what you've said already, my answer to that would be not as much as it used to. Would you agree?
I think Christmas is becoming more stressful. I don't think it's less stressful. I think the Christmas is of the 50s, the 60s, forget the war years. I think the Christmas of the past were, for middle-class families, and you know, the middle-class families have increased enormously in number over the last 50 years. I think Christmases for the middle-class families were very traditional. You know, the man wasn't bringing home work with a computer. He left work on the Friday or whatever day, at Christmas Eve, or maybe he was off work on Christmas Eve, and then he had a week's holiday. And he spent that time with the family. He wasn't taking work home. The division between the public and the private now is breaking down. We're bringing work home. There'll be many couples listening to this and around the world who this Christmas will have done work over Christmas. But they might have done the traditionally Christmas thing on Christmas Day, but come to 26, Boxing Day, many have been on the computer, they've been catching up.
Or I'm sat on the sofa with my iPad.
Yeah, there'll be my tablet. And it doesn't go away. They may not have gone into the office, sure, and they may be off on an extended break of a week or two, but for sure they won't. That won't be a period when they're not actually working. Many couples will be working. So I think, if going back to your question, I think it's a more stressful time. I think we're not taking a proper holiday. We're taking a potential holiday, but it's a holiday with so many expectations attached to it. And the expectations are particularly acute for women, more so for women than they are for men. And that's why I think the holiday season is more damaging for women. I think many women will come away from Christmas exhausted, physically, mentally and emotionally exhausted.
Thank goodness for January. I can have a rest now.
Yeah, absolutely. And there may be many women that be looking who are in full-time work, but only too pleased to get back to work. Come 5th or 6th of January, they'll think, oh, that's great. Now I can get back to the routine of work. Because the routine of work, the one thing about routine, it's predictable. You know what you've got to do. You know where your desk is. You know what your responsibilities. You've got this routine, yes. And you're in it. Because for a week or two, or certainly some days around the Christmas period, it's so intense. And maybe a lot of enjoyment. Maybe there's been a lot of love and sharing and companionship. And that's grand, fine. For a lot of families, that will have been the case. But for a lot of others, it will have become stressful. And they'll be thinking, oh, yeah, glad to get back to work now. I'm glad it's over.
How can guys help out with this? Well, let me. One kind of thing that comes to mind immediately, if it was just a couple with no children, would be, let's not stay home for Christmas.
Yeah, sure.
And that's a coping strategy, because that would take the stress and their expectations out there. You're in a hotel, maybe, or in a beach resort.
I would say to a professional couple with money, I would say the best thing you could do, if you want to really do something a bit different, that's go away for Christmas and take your respective parents with you. Take the parents with them, yeah. Make it a family thing and go to some hotel somewhere and just enjoy it. Just take some time out. It is a time to be with the family. But, you know, if you go to a hotel, let the hotel do the work.
Yes.
Let them do the cooking. Let them make the beds. Let them clean the room. And you just enjoy and chill out. And if everybody wants to go off and do their own thing, you know, go for a walk in the, you know, in the country or whatever it is, or by the beach, then they can do so. But, yeah, if you've got the money, take the families. Let it be a family, but take both families and just do it like that. Or if you don't want the in-laws, then just go away on your own. Yeah. For those parents without the money and under a lot of pressure, then they're going to be at home. But in that case, it comes back to the husband or the male partner to make sure that he is not just helping, but there's an equal division of labour in terms of who does what and when.
I can't do that. I have zero cooking skills.
Yeah, but so let's be honest. I mean, you've been married for 25 years to a Thai woman, and you're living a very traditional style of life. What your lifestyle here is very similar to mine, and many other Westerners who are living out in Thailand. The women we're married to, they want the traditional gender setup, and in a way, when I came out here and I started living with Mam, I had to slip back into a way of life I'd never really had, because even though I'd been married before in the UK, all my relationships before with Western women were built on absolutely totally equal. I mean, Rosemary and I were together for 16 years and we ran pubs and restaurants in the north of England. There's no way we didn't do everything split, but we had to do. It was the way it worked. And we raised a child at the same time. But you come out here and the Thai women particularly, and I'm not speaking now for all Asian women, but the Thai women particularly, they would much rather we were the male breadwinners and they looked after the family and home. And it works. It's just an alternative way of being. So I know your cooking skills are not very good, but you've got Nong.
Not very good, that's an understatement. But though you said the women's roles are changing, so, you know, even in Thailand, it's...
I think so. There'll be a new generation coming through who won't accept the values and attitudes of the mother. And I can see that with my own stepdaughter, Idea. My wife, Mam, is more traditional. She comes from a traditional family. She wouldn't... She won't let me near the kitchen. Now, she don't mind me doing a little bit, but, I mean, that's not what I... That's not my role.
Do you like to cook? I've lived
on my own for some time and I'm fine cooking, you know, yes. And I will do. I do cook my own food here. But if it's Thai food, obviously not. A mum comes in and she does it. I also pay for, we have a cleaner like you have. A cleaner keeps the house clean. Yes. So a mum's role...
Takes
some of that pressure off. But I could see Idea, 11-year-old stepdaughter, I can see her being very different. You know, may well get involved with a Westerner, and I can see her following a career. She'll have a different style of life. But if she does, she needs to get involved with a guy who's understands equality and respects that and is prepared to share the load, particularly when children are concerned.
Yes. Does the festive season damage women? It's an interesting question for us to debate, living in a Buddhist country, because we don't really celebrate Christmas anyway, right?
You did
do the disclaimer that festive is more than just Christmas.
I think
you touched on Chinese New Year, which is in this part of the world so big.
Well, Catherine Chen, who her comments inspired me to think about this for this podcast. She's writing about it, particularly in terms of what it means to Chinese New Year, and I think us Westerns out here, we can fail to see that, you know, we're still wrapped up in our own Western time frame, you know. But you and I both know in a few weeks' time, Chinese New Year is going to hit big here in Thailand, and certainly in China and around Taiwan. In China and Taiwan, for example, everything comes to a halt for 10 days. Mm. People go away, or there's big time for family reunions, coming together, again, the face, how you present it, who does what, and, you know, everybody's trying to bring good harmony for the future year. It's all a bit heavily built around superstition. But the gender that's, again, tasked with ensuring that happens...
Is the females.
Yeah.
It's interesting, Chinese New Year. You don't appreciate, certainly before I came to live here, I just didn't appreciate the scale of it. And Hong Kong closes down, which is really frightening for a week. You know, the printers, for example, if you want anything printed in Hong Kong for the whole month, they close down. It's when they have their holiday. Restaurants are actually closed. It's the only time when lots of restaurants close. And Hong Kong's a bit, I feel really sorry for the tourists who have planned their a lifetime trip to Hong Kong for holiday.
Chinese New Year.
And they think, Chinese New Year. Now, there are some festivities, public festivities, but the place is closed down.
China now, there's a big issues in places like Shenzhen, one of the big cities in southern China, Shanghai, obviously, Beijing, where you've got such a large local immigrant population. And by that, I mean Chinese who've moved to the cities from the countryside. And that for all the year, they live and work in the cities, earning money which they send back to their families in the remote and poverty-stricken parts of China. But at Chinese New Year, everybody's got to leave the city. And just trying to leave the city, you try to leave Shenzhen, population of 20 million, everybody wants to leave on the same day, on the same trains. Mm. You can't even get on the trains. The place is chaos. Mm. And it's a logistical nightmare for families, for couples. And it's trying to keep this family unit together at a time when capitalism, globalization, economic pressures, the desire to make money and have a better life, education, all the rest of it, all these pressures adding to family situations, family stress. And I think it's very acute in China. The Chinese New Year is just that moment when it all erupts, like it's in the West, it's Christmas. Everything gets put under strain at Christmas. You can get through the year, the remainder of the year, because of habit, routine. You can displace the flaws, the stresses in the relationship, because they're not under the gaze so much. You know, you've got work, yes, in the morning, you've got the routine of life. Come Christmas, the routine's broken down, it's gone. Yeah. And that's when a lot of the stresses get exposed. And it's the same out here in East Chinese New Year.
Yeah. We should bring this to an end now. There's been a lot of negative stuff in this last 40 minutes. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel, Stephen?
I think the light at the end of the tunnel is that women are changing. I mean, for me, this is the light, because do we want to go back to a situation where women were forced into relationships, forced into marriage, forced into routines, and limited prospects for the future? They're completely reliant on husbands who are often emotionally dysfunctional characters themselves, men. No, I think the light in the tunnel is that women are changing. This is the big thing. I mean, this is the good news. This is what we should be embracing and welcoming and applauding and celebrating. The fact that many men haven't changed yet, that's the problem. And that's what I'm picking up on here in this podcast. Christmas needn't be damaging for women. It's only damaging for women if men don't help out.
Yes.
It's not that women are a problem. Women are not the problem. They're doing the best. Come on, men. Get your fingers out.
Get your act together.
Get your act together and help.
Okay, a good.
I'm not just men in the West, but Chinese men out here, absolutely.
Yes. Good point to finish on. I think we'll finish there. Okay. And now I'm going to go and look for my cough mixture.
Thanks very well, though, Chris.
Thanks very much.
This recording is part of a Relationship Manifesto podcast series with Chris Smith and Stephen Whitehead.